The following programming is sponsored by
MBC Media.
The views expressed do not necessarily reflect this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group. Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And a Statue of Liberty
started shaking her fist. And an eagle will fly. And it's gone. Good afternoon and welcome back to the Conservative Voice.
At WWDB AM 860. Had a little sound start there we weren't clear on. Welcome to the Conservative Voice once again on WWDB AM 860 here in Philadelphia. We've got an interesting show for you today. This is Gary Heasley, your host. And with me, of course, is Ada Nestor.
Hello.
Our co-host here. And we're going to cover some things, of course, that have already been talked about. But maybe we'll just talk a little bit about the impact. And that is, of course, the debate. The big debate, the debate that was going to change the world, change the election, change everything. What did it really change? We'll get into that in just a moment. And then we're going to shift gears a bit. We're going to talk to a pastor named Dave Bergstrom. Dave is in Avon Grove. He's at a Presbyterian church there. And we're going to discuss this issue of the clergy being reluctant to actually speak to the issues that are affecting our nation, our families, our communities, and specifically some school stuff that he's seen in his district that he felt compelled to speak out about. So we're going to talk about a statement that he issued this week and his view on the role of the clergy in this great societal debate we're having right now as to which way this nation should go. Should it be continue down this trend that we're on, or a shift to a new direction? We'll have that conversation. At 1 o'clock, Kirk Hilzinger is going to join us. He is a Missouri member of the Republican Party. Yeah. He was a delegate to the RNC, the convention in Milwaukee. And Kirk was one of the delegates that was in a group that the party establishment tried to remove. They wanted him and his group out of the delegate position. They didn't want them going to Milwaukee. They put up a new slate, and it ended up causing a bit of a struggle. We're going to talk to him a little bit about this internal struggle in the party between sort of what I consider issue-driven ideological voters who say, for example, I'd like the Constitution restored, and the more establishment opportunistic wing of the party that says, we want absolute and total control. You'll vote for who we tell you to. Yep. And we don't care what you think, right? Mm-hmm. So everybody knows that's an ongoing fight.
In fact, don't think.
That's right.
Don't have any thoughts.
That's right. It's what we call the Republican Civil War. And then we're going to talk to a gentleman named Mark Cook. Now, I heard Mark speak in Ohio a couple of years ago. Mark is one of the IT people that worked on this IT issue when a voting election services or voter services clerk who was in Colorado, rather than allow the state to delete her hard drives, she took those hard drives, backed them up, as any proficient manager, anybody in IT would do. You would create a backup before there's a major change.
Not here. Not
but her name is Tina Peters, and mm-hmm. she was told by the Secretary of State and by, I think it was Dominion, whoever the vendor was, that they were going to come out and do a major upgrade to the servers on their voting machines and on their election management system. So she made backups.
Yeah.
And for that, she's now facing a long jail sentence. So we'll talk to Mark, who got one of the first looks at that. And we're going to talk about the state of the vulnerability of our election systems today. So that'll start at 1:30. That's Mark Cook. And I think you'll find that interesting. I can tell you when I heard him speak a couple of years ago, it was. And, you know, he's been very active since. So that's the show we've got planned today. But, of course, the thing that we can never guess is if and when you'll call. And if you do call, we will certainly try to get your questions in. We had a large number of callers last week, which we really loved because that's it's important to us not just that you hear what we think, but that we hear what you think. And so you could join this conversation by dialing our number, 888-329-3306. That's 888-329-3306. And with that, let's just jump into this discussion about the debate. So, you know, Ada, I know that you had a different perspective on the debate than most people.
I did.
So tell us, what were your reactions?
Well, I think, what did I say to you yesterday? It was something along the lines of people who don't understand Donald Trump because they've just been hopeful that he would be quiet and go away or lose finally and just get out of their hair are missing so much about Donald Trump. Donald Trump is a slow burn. He is willing to go out there. He is willing to make grand statements that maybe people have never heard in their life. For me, I know the exact grand statement he made that made me turn off MSNBC as my primary news source. He used the word coyotes. And I thought that was nuts. I had not heard anything about that. I had not heard that phrase used. It was in the first State of the Union. So I understand how he operates because I've been paying attention to him, and people who have been supportive and paid attention understand that he may say something that the moderators or the interviewer or even regular people hear and go, that's absurd. That's outlandish. He's too far gone. But then a day goes by, 2 days goes by, and the things that he said and the claims that he made are proven true every single time. So when I look at the responses from the debate and people saying that he should have hit other points or he didn't hit the right points that they wanted to hear from him, they didn't understand what he was doing because they don't pay close enough attention. I thought he did masterful because guess what? Everyone's still talking about that debate. And a few days after those pundits had their way in telling everyone that they should feel very good and how wonderful that she did in that debate, that smoke's clearing and people are going, wait, did we hear anything? Did we learn anything from her in this debate? And the answer is a resounding no. But at least Taylor Swift came out and endorsed her. I mean, I know she was really waiting and hoping on that night.
With perfect timing.
Oh, I mean, yes.
You wonder, you know, was it this football player that she's supposed to be dating? Was it his PR firm that set up the timing of this? Or was there another PR firm involved? I mean, to imagine that any of this is natural, of course, is silly on its face.
It looks like an orchestrated play that we're watching. I mean, there are pictures from Joe Biden in Pennsylvania this week that I had to get multiple angles of. I didn't even believe they were real pictures. He put a Trump hat on, and there's a picture of him smiling with a group of kids, and every one of them is in Trump shirts. Every one of the kids.
It was an interesting photograph.
Yeah.
I mean, it did seem a little bit strange.
Mm-hmm.
But in fact, it was real.
We're watching a movie. No one could convince me otherwise. This is the most craziest period of time I've seen.
It really is a bizarre time. And watching him bumbling around out there and then doing something that funny, it's hilarious. So we had a Keystone Town Hall last night, and it was great. We had a great crowd, and we talked about the debate, of course. And the first question is, was it a debate? Now, I didn't watch debates for years because it was the greatest waste of time I could imagine. I couldn't imagine a bigger waste of time than watching Democrat operatives ask questions to candidates that were either stacked against them because they were, you know, constitutional patriots and conservatives, or were so friendly as to just be the softest of softballs, and then watch nobody answer the question anyway. And you walk. So I quit watching debates many years ago, but I started again when Trump got involved, because obviously things changed. It became a little more interesting.
It was so much more fun.
It really is. So I unfortunately didn't catch a lot of this debate because I watched it in a large venue where there were a lot of people, a lot of noise. The acoustics weren't great. So it was hard to hear. It was hard to hear what was being said. But I watched a lot of the follow-up. And of course, there was this celebratory euphoria that came from the Democrat operatives at ABC and CNN, the Democrats at MSNBC. The entire Democrat media operation was in just a state of you know, elation over this debate, because in their minds they'd shown not just that Donald Trump was a bad orange man, but that Donald Trump had no idea, and they were no ideas of what to do, and they were trying to portray him as losing his mental faculties again. Another game they're going to play from now to the election. And so they went through this 24-hour state of euphoria, and then the people spoke. And that was fascinating. So I've got some clips that we thought about playing today but decided we couldn't because the language was inappropriate for radio.
Some of them are really good, though. I've tweeted them out.
They're really good. And these are people that are in demographics that the Democrat Party has relied on for you know, 100 years.
Yeah.
These are, you know, for example, black females in their early 30s who are saying, one of them just, you know, crying and screaming at the camera saying, here Kamala Harris is laughing at us. We're losing our homes. We've got people on drugs out here. We've got fentanyl. We've got all these things going on, and she's laughing at us and about the trials and tribulations that are being caused by her policies.
Right.
Now, this woman is in a specific demographic. These people do not expect to have thinking about policy or even connecting what the Democrats are doing, these globalist lunatics, connecting these policies they put in place, the actions they're taking, to the impact on the lives of the citizenry.
Yeah.
They don't expect them to get that, and yet they are.
Mm-hmm.
So it was fascinating to watch the people begin to speak. And of course, then we stumbled into Springfield, Ohio.
Oh my gosh.
And
who knew?
Who knew?
Who knew it would be the pets being swept up by immigrants that would rally the crowd? I mean, I guess we're waiting on PETA's endorsement for Donald Trump.
I think PETA should be stepping up immediately.
I saw a great video with Sarah McLachlan with Angel playing in the background, the best use of that song I've heard yet.
I played that video at the town hall last night. It was hilarious because it's this song that's often used in an attempt to raise money for somebody, for
PETA or one of the animals. Yeah, yeah.
So they play this sad song and they watch all this stuff. And here, this was, you know, cats in Ohio trying to escape, you know, crawling over pipes. It was hilarious. It was great. And the crowd loved it.
Eric Swalwell lost his mind in a committee meeting. He had a meme behind him. I mean, think about this. These memes, some of these are AI created. I created a few of my own on Grok on Twitter. So these are memes that cost nothing.
Mm-hmm.
That are super effective. No one's paying for them. We do it on our own.
Right.
And it made it to the dais at the U.S. House of Congress.
I love the meme wars. The meme wars are great. And the best reason, the reason I really love the meme wars is lefty can't meme, right?
Yeah.
The globalists have no sense of memeing.
They are the meme. That's why.
So many decades of just practiced lying. Mm-hmm. They don't know how to make fun of anything. The memes are the best. So I played that video. I played some of the memes. The crowd was laughing and having a great time. But you know, here they called him out as a lunatic for saying something about Haitians and they're eating these animals in the park. There's no evidence.
What did David Muir say? He said they talked to the city manager.
Yes.
And he assured them this was not true.
Right.
Mind you, the 911 call was already out. So...
Exactly. So the 911 call, the video of the woman eating the cat, well, that wasn't technically in Springfield. Oh, who cares?
Uh-huh.
You know, you've got the people standing up at town meetings and saying they're eating the pets, they're taking the ducks out of the park. You know, it was unbelievable.
I'm guessing it was New York or New Jersey, somewhere on the East Coast. And a woman literally walked up to a man and asked him what he was doing with the seagull and physically took the seagull from this man's hands and walked away with it. Like, no, you're not. No, you're not. Give me that bird back. So
there
it's
was
happening.
An article got written by some leftist newspaper. I don't know. Maybe it was the New York Times. No, it was something smaller than that. I don't know. One of the Democrat newspapers. And they said, yes, racist, you eat birds too.
No, that was the Pacific. That actually is one of our memes as well. That's a mean public meme publication. It's like the Babylon Bee, but they try to fashion it after the Atlantic.
Oh, there it is. No, the Downtown Press.
I think that may be satire.
It may be satire, but yeah. It was great. It was a great cover.
Our satire is so good that you don't even know it's satire anymore.
Well,
so.
I would expect them to say this.
Sure.
But then there was a great meme of Chuck Schumer. There's a well-known meme of Chuck Schumer grilling hamburgers, right? All this, everybody, all the politicians have to grill to look normal.
Yeah.
And somebody put a cat there with cheese on it.
Well, because his burgers looked that bad to begin with, which is why it's a meme to start with.
Well, the reality is that they came out and said Trump was a lunatic and a racist for saying this. And over the next 24, 48 hours, the deluge of memes and commentary and the replaying of all the citizens testifying at these township meetings or city meetings, it just overwhelmed them. So they've lost on every front. They've lost. And so... Rasmussen did a poll that came out yesterday. So it's the post-debate poll. And, of course, everyone expected that Trump would be, what, down 20? I don't know, down 5? You know, it turns out they have him up, and he's up at this point in their polling by about 2 points.
Yeah.
Now, I don't think the presidential polling is correct.
No.
And I think the reasons are that there are a lot of unpollables in the community. So we've got people who haven't voted frequently, people who haven't maybe been registered before. People who just aren't going to respond to a poll, that aren't politically engaged, but now facing this inflation battle, facing, you know, the end of civilization as we try to figure out how to get into a nuclear war with Russia, you know, 400,000 Americans dead from opiates in 4 years, a multiple of what was happening before. I mean, just an incredible scale up of death. And I think that, that there are a lot of people who aren't reaching the polls, but who are supportive. So my estimate right now is that we're about 10 points ahead. And by we, I mean, you know, the patriots, the Americans, the pro-American side against the globalists. And the globalists, you know, they know it and they're panicked. And you could see it when their operatives start to talk, whether it's an Adam Schiff or a James Carville or whomever. And even some of the ones that are on the media are now starting to come out and say, you're losing, you know, these core demographics that we have focused on for years, the young female, that you're losing. Now, the Democrats' response is, well, we've got abortion, the magic word, right? And it has been a magic word. They utter the word abortion, and people who seem, you know, based on discussions with them, to know nothing of actual abortion law, rush out to vote for whatever lunatic they're pointed at because that person's going to guarantee that they can take a child and end it. And, you know, okay, well, it's just not, it's not a magic word that seems to be working quite as effectively. I'm sure with the over-undereducated, suburban, you know, multi-degreed leftist, what do they call them? The white savior,
right?
The white saviors. With those people, it doesn't matter what you say. They're going to vote for anything the left, the globalists put up. They'll vote exactly as they're told. They're unthinking mobs. But for people that are actually facing the economy, for people that are young that are saying, I'm not going to have the life my grandparents had. I'm not likely to be able to achieve what my parents did. Why am I stretched to the ends of my income when you told me if I got this crazy degree in medieval Russian poetry or women's studies, I would somehow be a billionaire? You know, these people are really, I think, stepping away from the magic words. I think the magic words are less effective. Is that, what is your view?
No, I think when you're faced with, I can't afford my groceries this week, or an abortion that may or may not ever come to pass, you have to go with your groceries. You have to go with how much your energy is costing you. I do think it's important to note, though, when the last debate resulted in the knocking out of the candidate that he was debating, in that Joe Biden showed how frail he was and needed to be replaced on the ticket, I mean, in the White House, but I expect that in October, actually. I think people's expectations were a little bit too high set going into the debate with that in mind. You know, we expected her to come out looking fairly polished. She went in practice. These are professional politicians. And I think that's the other thing people miss, too. Donald Trump is not a professional politician. We love him because he just speaks his mind and he says what's going on without the careful, cultured, you know, very manipulated language that they put out to their press groups and different, what are the groups that all sit in a room? I forget what they're called.
The think tanks.
Yeah, like to get whether or not that phrase is going to work for them or not. He doesn't do any of that. So we're dealing with a completely different caliber of person. And again, it's the caliber of person that we appreciate and we want fighting for us. But then the other side, the Republicans still within the party, are hoping he loses, aren't saying it out loud, can't come out and necessarily, you know, endorse Kamala, but they're hoping Trump loses this year so that they can go back to normal or get back to their old party. And I've got news for them. MAGA's never going away. America First is here to stay. So all of these endorsements that Kamala got this week, who did she get in the last week? Dick Cheney, which I hope they keep him. If he could just switch his registration and go ahead and completely move to the other. I mean, I thought Dick Cheney was bad in 2001. I thought he was bad in 2003. Like, I've always thought Dick Cheney was a bad guy, a war criminal, possibly.
Not a warm and cuddly figure?
No. Even as a Democrat, I disliked him. As a Republican, I've disliked him. His daughter has been an epic disappointment. So they should just switch teams. You're going to endorse Kamala? You're going to endorse these policies? Guess what? There is nothing conservative about you. You may have gotten rich being a neoconservative in the party and your endorsements and all the money. There is nothing conservative about you if you are endorsing Kamala Harris. None of her policies are conservative. If anything, they're radical and progressive. And if she's put a cute spin on them for 2024, all you have to do is look back at 2020 to see exactly where she was headed. So it's smoke and mirrors. Mm-hmm. We're in a mirage of events and influence that's been curated and created to elicit the response that we're seeing from people right now.
Well, there in this theme of people who are endorsing the other side, so the establishment Republicans, in Mesa, Arizona, John Giles, the mayor of Mesa, now has endorsed the leftists. And yeah. All right, so he's voting for the destruction of our nation. Fair enough.
Thank you for telling us. That's right. How I feel about it. Thank you.
That's right. And he pointed to the late John McCain's country first approach, as if somehow endorsing the people who keep the border wide open, who have hundreds of thousands of dead Americans because of drugs that shouldn't be in this country, that have put 15 million, as somehow that's putting country over party. It is a preposterous thing to say. It comes back to, I think, the point you made. The reality is they don't want Trump to win. They want their party back.
Yeah.
They want all these voters to shut up and do as they're told. They're tired of having to deal with issues. They don't care about the issues. How do we know that? Ask yourself, what is the number one issue that the Republican Party's been fighting over the last 4 years? What's the number one point they make? There isn't one. We've known, for example.
I was actually really stumped, and I was getting worried that I didn't know the answer to your question. Yeah. There was one, but I don't think there is.
There is no answer.
I don't think there's an answer.
So, you know, this guy points to election denial. Well, the Democrat Party's denied every election that they lose. Hillary Clinton never accepted 16. The woman down in Georgia still thinks she's governor.
Stacey Abrams
thinks she's governor of Georgia.
Really?
So it's preposterous to think that for some reason you're going to move to the other side because they're more willing to accept outcomes that make no sense. Now, the thing is, when you look at actual what happened in Georgia, what happened with Trump in 16, obviously made sense. They were just angry because their system failed them.
Right.
So he goes on.
Because it doesn't work all the time. It's not fail proof for 100%. The cheat does have some variation in it.
And it can
be
overwhelmed by volume. And they never saw the crowds coming in 16. The unpollable voters, maybe people who hadn't voted in a long time, people who in some cases, again, weren't registered. I had a guy say he was still registered to vote, but he hadn't voted in 30 years. And he couldn't wait to get to the polls to vote for Donald Trump. They never saw them coming. And what has to happen in this election, the people who want to defeat the cheat have got to come out in big numbers and get everyone they know to come out who agrees with them. But this Republican mayor gets, of course, all of a sudden national coverage. Now, he's in Arizona. It's a border state. Not yeah. like every other state's a border state. He's on the border.
Yeah.
He knows about the cartels. Jalisco is, I don't know what the distance is between their main town and where Mesa is, but it's not far. So this is a man who's actively saying, I support the invasion and destruction of the United States. I don't like, exactly.
Money.
This guy has to be in some way tied to that cabal.
Yeah.
So when you look at this, the people that are signed over, as you said, with all the folks that are going over and saying we support Harris, yeah, let him have him.
Mm-hmm.
Because
the other one too. You brought up Arizona. It was John McCain's son who came out and endorsed Kamala. And I was like, who?
That was fascinating.
Irrelevant.
Yeah, completely irrelevant. And by the way,
John McCain's son hates Donald Trump. What a shock.
John McCain, the senator and wealthy, absolutely secure person who knew about Epstein's Island. His wife confirmed they knew about Epstein's Island. And his wife said,
We all knew,
but we chose not to take action.
Yeah.
He now says, I'm voting against Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. The one guy that really focused on eliminating child trafficking and building a border wall to stop the hundreds of thousands of children being pulled into this country.
Shock.
And handed by Health and Human Services, according to Senator Chuck Grassley, over to cartel members who are their sponsors.
Yep.
So I'm not at all moved by these people. What I care about is that woman that was in that video, the 32-year-old woman from Springfield, Ohio, that was crying into a video. Now this is a black female with, you know, a lot of metal in her face and uses a bit of foul language. And she's saying, how dare you laugh at us? We're losing our homes. We've got people out here that are dying from fentanyl and you're laughing at us.
Yeah.
That's who I care about. That's the vote I want.
Yeah.
Not this goofy John Giles from Mesa, Arizona. He should be removed.
Oh, I immediately knew her facial reactions to what he was saying. Because they wanted to play it off as preposterous. They wanted to play it off as if what he was saying was so ridiculous that there was nothing to do but laugh. But we know it was true. So mm-hmm. when I saw her do that, I said, that's going to upset a lot of people who are actually living in this situation right now, who are dealing with this situation. Their candidate that wants their votes is laughing at them, is pretending like it isn't happening. I knew immediately that was going to backfire big time.
I underestimated the response from the people. I didn't see it coming in the wave that it
Leave
has.
It to the conspiracy.
Well, there you go. I really didn't think that it was going to penetrate the way it did, that as many people paid attention as did. This started out with a celebration among the Democrat operatives on media. The punditry was, again, elated. And it ended up with them yelling at each other on their own channels saying, yep. We are losing critical demographics without whom we can't win.
Yep.
Another real, but we got about 4 minutes left before we start with Dave Bergstrom. But the other point that we talked about at the town hall last night that came up on CNBC the other day is tariffs.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Standard Economist, I wish we had Joel on to talk about this because I think he and I have a slightly different view of it, but we'll get him on and we'll go through this. Tariffs certainly are something that I am sort of naturally opposed to, right? I don't like tariffs. I don't like the idea of tariffs. I don't think government should be doing this.
I think today.
But the reality is when you're working against a competing country like China that puts export supports, in other words, they're putting subsidies into products that are being exported around the world, and they're putting tariffs on anything that's exported that is a low-value item. So in other words, if you're going to export a raw material, they're going to say, no, you can't send it out. We want to keep that here and convert it to something more valuable. That takes more jobs and makes more money. But we will support the export of our products into other countries to make sure that we can undercut the trade rules and say you're delivering it at cost when, in fact, your cost is artificially low. And what has happened in doing that is they've grabbed entire sectors of industries out of Europe and the United States while the globalists have run around and screamed at us that if we do anything to stop them, it is somehow a barrier to free trade and we're heretics.
Yep.
Well, I'll tell you, at some point you have to say we should be able to make doxicillin. There was a doctor in the crowd last night that was talking about doxicillin and the fact that we don't make these basic...
Right, they're in China now, all the production.
Basic medicines, we just can't make them here.
Yep.
You know, we will allow them to take out significant industries. At one point, we couldn't make a fighter plane without China providing us with materials for the guidance systems because we had killed the industry that produced them here. China had captured the whole industry. At some point, you have to say, yes, we could buy it cheaper if we allowed China's government to subsidize the product and we were willing to ship that entire industry overseas for a while. Until China has us under their control. And then we will pay in two ways. One, we lose our sovereignty and our national security is at risk. And we're going to pay more because they will charge us as much as we can pay until we're broke. So,
and there's a benefit to the country prioritizing like our national production. There's a benefit to the country to increase our in-country manufacturing to avoid having to even deal with it. I look at tariffs as a deterrent to try and flood our market with bad products, poor products, and I look at it as a way to stimulate our own economy here and to motivate our companies to want to remain in the country and mm-hmm. invest in the country and in the U.S. workers. So that's always how I looked at it. I know that you and Joel have different perspectives, mm-hmm. and I'm learning more as we're discussing, especially on the economic side. But I think I learned through Trump that other countries were, you know, marking all of our stuff up that went into their country.
Yes.
So it's not like it's one-sided or we would be bullies by doing what all of these other nations have been doing to us all along. Is that correct? I mean, am I
so
off there?
When in 16 in the campaign, when Donald Trump first said, I will put a 25% tariff on products coming out of China, the Chinese said, well, that's a barrier. You can't do that. That would be wrong.
Right.
2 weeks after he made that announcement, they announced that they were implementing a 26% tariff on products coming out of Europe, a specific kind of materials called electrical steels. And they were doing that specifically to shutter the last mill in the entirety of Europe that made those products.
Yeah.
They'd already captured so much of the market for that product that without access to China, the company couldn't survive.
Mm-hmm.
So they used
tariffs.
It's
like industrial warfare.
It is absolutely. It is.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it is. It's a trade war that we've been in for 40 years and we've refused to fight it. And as a result, our employment, as we've seen, and we talked about this with Joel a lot, our employment in part-time jobs has climbed dramatically. Our full-time jobs are dropping. The high-value jobs are moving overseas. But we have more baristas in this country than they could ever have in a normal nation, right? We have downgraded our ability to keep and grow high-value jobs and increased our ability to have these lower-value service jobs. And look, I don't have anything against baristas.
No.
I don't go to Starbucks, but
I
don't have anything against baristas. But let's face it, it's going to be pretty hard to support a family of four when you're serving coffee at a fast food joint.
Oh, impossible.
Right? So,
well, unless the progressives remain in control and take further control, because in their mind, you should be able to support a family of four at McDonald's. So,
well, now see, that gets into this minimum wage debate.
I know.
And it's, we don't have time to go through the whole thing right now,
sorry.
But the reality is,
slipped in it at the end there.
When the government tries to set the value of labor, they're no more able to do that than to set the value of any other product. Right. And we want to think that labor is somehow special, but it's an economic good like anything else. So they're going to tell us how much we have to pay for labor. OK, so it's $15 minimum wage at a fast food restaurant. That means the burgers go up. But that means the people that are skilled labor, they're going to say, if I can make 15 at McDonald's, I want to make 25 here or 45 or whatever.
Right.
So you have immediate inflation of wages, but no increase in the value created by the person doing the job.
Yeah.
It is truly just an inflationary thing when the government steps in and sets a regulation to set the value of labor. They cannot do it. So now you get wage inflation, then you get prices that adjust to cover that wage inflation,
yeah.
And all of a sudden, in real terms, in inflation, you're right back where you started because they are unable to change the value of the job.
Yeah.
They could just change the price of the job.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a fool's errand to try to do that. Governments ought not be involved in trying to set the price of labor or, frankly, sugar or raisins or any of the other things that we've talked about.
What a conservative belief.
Well, it turns out, you know, if you adopt this idea that government is your parent and government can determine all things, that they're omniscient and omnipotent, you end up in the Soviet Union.
Oh,
right?
What a surprise.
Now,
that's how it happens?
That's how it happens. And of course, the Soviet Union lasted 70 years. It was 70 years of darkness and suffering and death in the basement of Lubyanka prison.
You vote yourself in, but you can't vote yourself out.
No, you can't. And right now, China, of course, is well into their socialist, communist, dictatorial, authoritarian government. But China's had an advantage in that we've been willing to sacrifice our economic well-being for them.
Yeah.
So just like the oil countries have the ability to sell this oil into the West and get to a point where they can afford 747s as their family jets, the Chinese have been growing their economy by sucking up all this economic value out of the U.S. and out of Europe and capturing that. Well, when we get to the point that
it's
our—
It's a little bit of a mirage in China, though. Like, I do think there's a little bit of a bubble there.
There may be bubbles there,
yeah.
But they could not be where they are if they weren't
sure.
Draining Europe and the United States
yep.
of high-value jobs and of quality, right? And we wouldn't be at $35 trillion in debt if we had responsible government and if our economy was as robust as we think it is,
mm-hmm.
right? A lot of our GDP growth, of course, driven by debt. So we got to wrap this, but the challenge with China will come if Europe's economy finally breaks, if we lose our ability to print money, and so we can no longer support them, and then they have to run on their own system.
Yeah.
That's where the China bubble that you're talking about
mm-hmm.
becomes a problem. You know, when you're knocking down buildings that have never been occupied, that are brand new, as China was doing, a year and a half ago they started that.
Because they built cities no one lived in.
They built cities because that created jobs and
mm-hmm.
that created fake GDP.
Yeah.
Then they knocked those buildings down, but we didn't
see
their GDP go down.
No, nope.
Right? So this mirage, as you put it, right, is not a bad way to say it. If we lose our ability or willingness to support them in every way, if we aren't willing to allow them to control, the healthcare industry, all the PPE and all the, all the medicines.
Yeah.
If we stop doing that, then China falls into great distress.
Well, maybe that's a start.
So. There's another issue, of course, that we've been facing, which is this this challenge of getting clergy who will actually speak to issues. So most of them hide behind the IRS and say, well, if I actually talk about the things that are affecting our families, I could lose my tax-free status. We know that many of them are concerned about offending the harpy in the back row, right? These screaming lunatics that if you say anything that isn't on the woke agenda, they will stand up and yell.
Yeah.
So we know that, you know, that's what we've heard from a lot of folks. But we've got with us today a pastor, Dave Bergstrom, who is in Avondale Presbyterian Church and who recently put out a note that he sent to the school board. And if you would like,
I'll read
would
a
you
little
read that
bit.
For us?
I'll read a little bit of it before we bring him on. It begins with, thank you for awakening the church. For a few decades, the church has failed to get involved in cultural and political issues. Oh, we have done a great job introducing people to Jesus Christ and how to live a Christ-like life, but we have been silent on other fronts. Not anymore. We have awakened to the need to bring our values into every arena of life. We have the truth. We know what is right and wrong, and we are going to speak the truth. We will do it in love. We will not condemn those who disagree, but we are going to be the voice of God in the community. We also have God on our side when it comes to speaking the truth. End the truth on this issue, gender dysphoria, and letting confused children use bathrooms and locker rooms that are not in line with their biological sex is wrong. As a school board, everyone knows sharing bathrooms and locker rooms is wrong. Therefore, you need to do the right thing. Write a policy that protects our children. If you don't write the policy, then this is what will happen. The church will begin to raise up Christian academies, Christian schools, help parents learn how to homeschool effectively. The church will rise to the occasion and orchestrate the replacement of school board members who oppose the will of this community and God. When World War II began, Roosevelt said that the attack on Pearl Harbor had awakened the sleeping giant. Let me announce to you that the woke movement, the DEI movement, the critical race theory indoctrination of children, and this gender dysphoria issue has awakened the sleeping church. We will not just be a distraction. We will be the answer for the community that wants conservative values and God-honoring values taught to our children. He ends with, you have the power to do what is right for this community on this issue. Just do it. So what a statement. I mean, that's exactly what you want to hear from every pulpit, from every pastor, because this is very simply a fight between right and wrong and good and evil. So
yeah, there's no circumstance in which it makes sense, no matter what Vanderbilt and Boston Children's Hospital and CHOP say, where it makes sense for doctors to be injecting things in children and going after children with needles and knives, you know, injecting them and then cutting them up into some configuration really before they're even able to figure out what's going on. It's, you know,
they're sterilizing children.
Oh, they are. And the common point is, well, they can't get a tattoo, but they could agree to have their genitals removed.
Right.
And I mean, it's preposterous on its face. And yet they say, well, you could either have a live son or a dead daughter or a dead daughter, live son, whichever they're going to go. And of course, when you look at the statistics for suicide, of course, that argument is nonsense and they know it.
Yeah.
They know that suicide is not lower amongst those children that have been attacked with needles and knives by doctors who have an ideology and a desire to make money, right? And that's the only people that are doing this. It's a bizarre ideology. It's a religious ideology, the woke thing, and a desire to make money. But we have Pastor Dave Bergstrom on the line with us today. Dave, welcome to the Conservative Voice on WWDB AM 860.
Thank you for having me.
So we read your statement, and, we found it compelling because you heard what we said earlier in the show. We were concerned, or I guess it's been a growing issue in a lot of people's minds, that the religious community, the pastors and so on, are simply not stepping up to talk about issues that are affecting our families, saying, well, it's political and therefore I can't talk about it. Why did you choose to write this letter?
Well, I chose to write the letter because I got involved with dealing with the school board on this gender dysphoria issue. Mm-hmm. The school board was open to allowing biological boys to be in girls' locker rooms and bathrooms and vice versa, and we felt that was it wasn't healthy for the kids. It was immoral, and so got involved. And there was a group of us, about five of us, that began to talk, and then another group popped up, and they shared the same values. And so we have been writing emails to the school board every day.
Mm-hmm.
We have gone to every school board meeting that they've had since we organized. And the first meeting we had 100 people in the community come along with us. And then this last meeting we had just a couple of days ago, looked like about 300 people were there. And we were making a statement to the school board saying, well, we're not going to change. We're going to do what we want to do. And so we've made it clear we're not going to go away.
Mm-hmm. Which, for our listeners here in Philadelphia, Chester County has been on a warpath to implement all of these changes in the schools in Chester County. I am a member of the Westchester Area School District, and we have the same fight there. I think it's imperative for the moral representatives of our community, those who speak for a large group of people, to come out and use their voice to say, hey, listen, it just may be my voice that you're hearing, because other people are too afraid to stand up and speak up. They don't want any backlash on their children. I've heard that before as an excuse as to not speak up. But when you come forward with your voice, Pastor, you come with a voice of your, you know, the people who follow you in your church behind you. And have they responded, you know, in a positive way? Has the community been positive in terms of your statement?
The community has been very, very positive. My congregation has rallied. They write emails themselves on a regular basis. They have attended the school board meetings to support those of us who are dealing with the school board. We got other pastors that are coming on board and are really excited about making a difference.
We could use them in Westchester. If you have any Westchester pastors, please have them reach out.
We're not sharing them. We need them here.
I think the Moms for Liberty injunction, the Title IX injunction that went into place, helped in some ways. But as our superintendent and others have noted, the PA Department of Health or Education, I can't remember exactly which one, did put out a rule that allows for the locker room use, the bathroom mm-hmm. use. So while the Title IX injunction, I think there's six schools now covered under that in Westchester. Does Avondale have any schools that are covered under the injunction currently?
Well, we have, I think, four or five Moms for Liberty people right in our community that attend the school board meetings.
Okay.
But we have been told that they're not listening to them.
Well, right, because they passed that rule at the state level. Mind you, it's not a law at the state level, so I think that's maybe the next fight that parents have to undertake, is to go after these state departments and say you don't have a right to make rules that violate the PA state constitution. The constitution clearly indicates sex and not gender mm-hmm. as the part that needs to be respected. So it's wild to watch them continue forward in this direction.
Well, we talked to our representative, John Lawrence, and he said that there is no law that that states that we have to have open bathrooms and open locker rooms.
And for developing kids, I think, you know, a lot of people think that we're being purists or a little bit too moral, or trying to place our moral values on someone else. And that is not at all what it is.
No.
The level of confusion it creates in a child pre-pubescent may not be as bad as the level of confusion that you're going to face with a pubescent child. Think about when you were a teenager going through all the changes you were going through. If you had to make those changes or do those things or grow up that way with boys in your bathroom or boys in your locker room, when I was a teenage girl, I didn't even want to get changed in front of other females. So it's making them drop boundaries, mm-hmm. natural boundaries that we're just inherently blessed with that keep us safe.
Right.
And put themselves at risk.
I think one of the things that the side that's pushing this wants is just to sow confusion in the minds of our kids. And let's just take a look at the gender dysphoria issue. If they're beginning to think about bringing the gender ideology into our elementary schools, into the first, second, third grade, hiding it underneath of into another subject so nobody and no parent will know what's being taught. And let me ask you a question. What 3-year-old boy or 4-year-old boy sits back and says, you know, I wonder if I'm a girl? The only reason they would even think that is if somebody planted a seed to say to them, you know, perhaps you're not a boy, maybe you're a girl. And if they can get that into the elementary schools, by the time they're in high school, they're already talking about sex change.
That's right.
So, Pastor, I'll tell you, I would probably guarantee it's already at the elementary school and it's hidden under social emotional learning. You have things like the gender bear. There's a gingerbread gender bear as well that they are doing with first, second, third grades, I think all across Chester County. I think our Chester County Intermediate Unit has something to do with it as well. But it's there. The confusion they're sowing is intentional. And, you know, when you have confused children who feel like their parents won't understand them, because that's also part of the message. Part of the message is your parents may not accept you. You're accepted here in my classroom. This is a safe space for you. As if every parent out there would do something terrible or harm their child if they were to come out as gay or transgender. I think the reason they create that distance between us, between the children and the parents, is so that they can then shuttle them through the treatments and things that they want to advance as part of their agenda without the parents' knowledge. And I think that's where we're going.
Yes.
Yeah, and I think one of the things we have to understand or believe is that this movement is really based on Marxism. And if you can destroy the family, you can destroy the community.
Mm-hmm.
And so we could divide the children from their parents and make the children think that the school's more important than their parents are, that the school loves them and understands and their parents don't. The church doesn't understand them because they take a stand the other direction. You're going to destroy the children. You can really mess up with the church. You're going to destroy your community.
Yeah,
and you're going to have Marxism.
That's true. It is part of this whole ideology that involves, it's a leftist Marxist ideology, clearly. And in the schools, it is unique. You know, I, Pastor, when we spoke earlier, I mentioned that I'd been in a school a couple of years ago. It was a striking experience because of the level of advertising that was being done for sexuality.
It was a Westchester school.
Yeah, it was in Westchester. Yeah. And it was, you know, there were, I said this in a show before, there were floor to ceiling banners with rainbows on them promoting sexuality talk in general and homosexuality.
This was in middle school.
Middle school,
sixth
right.
Through eighth.
Sixth through eighth grade. So it was a, you know, big banners. Every bulletin board had rainbows and trans material on it. Every room had a little sticker that was either a rainbow flag or a trans flag. So when a kid walked into
When a kid walked into that school
and walked down the hallway, they were assailed with a constant flood of imagery and marketing to open up this question of, do you really think that you're a boy or should you maybe consider being a girl? Do you really feel like you're female or should you maybe consider changing to something else? It isn't a natural thing for kids to be walking down the halls and seeing that.
No.
Now, if you changed all of that imagery to a corporation's branding.
Pfizer.
Just put Pfizer logos.
Pepsi, Pfizer banners.
Chevrolet.
Yeah.
Then everybody would say, you're marketing in our schools and you can't do that. This should be a marketing-free zone.
Yeah.
But because it's the woke ideology that's being marketed, it's this bizarre leftist-driven religion that's being marketed. And because these school boards have been radicalized and support this religion, because of all of that, it's accepted.
Right.
Pastor, I have a different kind of question, sort of in the same vein, but getting away from the school topic specifically. Are you seeing in the religious community an a rising up? Because I have to tell you, early 2020, I was looking for a new church home, and I had the opportunity, because everyone was closed and doing virtual services, to really get a good peek into a lot of different services. And I was kind of alarmed and shocked by some of the ideology, progressive, I would say, ideologies that were being kind of pushed from the pulpit. Are you seeing more of a return to moral values, or are you seeing a lot of that progressive push?
You know, I think in our mainline denominations, we're seeing the progressive push more and more.
Yeah.
The Methodist Church, Presbyterian Church, the Episcopal Church, and the woke movement is really accepted by the leadership. I'm not saying by the congregation, but by the leaderships. And they're passing all kinds of rules and regulations to encourage that. But on the other side, there's the evangelical church that's non-denominational that is saying, hey, this is what we believe and this is what we're going to teach, and we're going to get involved, and we're going to stand up, and we're going to take on our school boards, and we're going to take on our some of the issues in our culture head on. Not in anger, but in love, hoping to set people in the right direction.
Well, I think...
Go ahead.
It is important to note that this is about loving people. It's not about hate. This isn't about setting anybody out. Now, we have two callers on the line, so let's bring them in. We've got about 6 minutes left. Let's bring them in and hear their question or comment. Sandy M.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Pastor, I just wanted to thank you. I live in the Avon Grove School District, and I appreciate your letter that you put out, and I'm hoping it goes viral, and I appreciate everything that you're doing to help get people out to these board meetings, because the truth is important. So just thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah, it is important, and as we said earlier in this segment, there just aren't many pastors that are willing to do this. I was at an event at a church recently, and clearly the pastor in that church is fully engaged in talking about the issues that are affecting families. And it's encouraging because, I am confused as to why over these last decades the religious community has said collectively, this is not a right view. You know, maybe you can explain to me better what's really going on. But it seems to me that the church is, again, talking about the IRS, have just pulled back entirely and just let the society burn. Is my perception just wrong on that? I mean, am I overstating the case?
I think it's a combination of a lot of things. First of all, the church's main responsibility is to teach the Bible, to introduce people to Christ, and help them live the way Christ wants them to. So that's the first main responsibility we have. Then we have the Johnson bill that came around and said, hey, if you talk about political issues in the church, we could take away your tax exempt. And people go, oh, okay, we'll be quiet. And then somebody began to talk about separation of church and state, and some of the churches began to believe that lie, that there's separation of church and state, which there really isn't. But because we have been pushed and we've bought the lie, churches become silent on cultural issues. And I believe that God is waking the church up right now to say, hey, listen, keep preaching the word, keep introducing people to Christ, keep teaching them how to live, but get out there in that community and make a difference and stop the decay that's happening around you.
Right. We have another caller, another Sandy, I believe, on the line. Sandy, what is your question or comment? And it sounds like an open line. Okay, we'll move on. I think that she's not with us right now. So I think your points are well made, and hopefully this is a growing perspective. Look, I don't want to live in a theocracy, right? I don't want to live in a place where you know, a religion chosen by politicians decide how we're going to live. And what's happening right now is that we are, in fact, moving toward a theocracy that is determined and selected by these leftist ideologues who have, again, come to dominate school boards, come to dominate townships and county commissions, county councils, or whatever they're called in your county. That is what we're seeing, is moving toward this theocracy. And it's not just in government. It's being enforced in workplaces and elsewhere. I think the American people have had enough, and I think that they're beginning to push back. But I'm specifically glad that you are pushing back from your position, because, you know, you are a leader in your community. And look, not everybody's going to agree with you. That's fine. They don't have to agree. But at the end, we have to each play a role in trying to help chart the course of this nation. Because if we don't play that role, the leftists stand ready and excited to fill the gap.
I heard a saying the other day, if you're looking around trying to figure out who's in charge of this, it's you. You're the one in charge now. So, you know, we all have to stand up from wherever we are in the community and use our voices. And I think it's fantastic. I was so excited to read your note this week when Sandy sent it. And I so appreciate what you're doing. It's very, very important right now.
And, well, thank you very much.
And if I could just jump in then, I think, Pastor Dave, they can find you on Facebook at Avondale Presbyterian Church, right? You've got a group on Facebook?
Yes, we do.
So it's Dave Bergstrom, pastor of Avondale Presbyterian Church. If you'd like to follow what he's got to say, then you can find him on Facebook there.
I appreciate hearing that. Thanks for the advertisement.
Well, you know.
Thanks for the work.
We appreciate what you're doing, and we appreciate that you've joined us here on the Conservative Voice. And we hope that you continue to pursue this this activism, because, again, in the absence of people trying to advocate for what our culture is and our Constitution is and all these things that we're really fighting over right now as a nation, if no one steps up, the other side loses and there's no fight. It's time we turn and fight.
Yeah.
So.
And that's what it is. It's a spiritual battle, and we're going to fight it.
Absolutely.
Well, we're glad you are. So
thank you
so much for joining the Conservative Voice on WWDB. Now, in this next hour, we have a little election integrity talk, and we're also be talking about what's going on in Missouri. Please join us in a few minutes on WWDB AM 860's The Conservative Voice.